And away we go for the Thursday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga, joined alongside Justin Bourne at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne, where you can find us on Twitter. Producer Sam McKee, Technical Ops Lance Kennedy, and Dylan Brown navigating things behind the scenes. First and foremost, we invite all to check out Elliot Friedman's latest on Sportsnet.ca, an updated blog on the fallout from a nearly three-hour NHLPA call yesterday. Bottom line, as you heard there in the update, the players are angry and they feel betrayed. The clock is ticking on the hopes of a January 1st puck drop. Elliot, by the way, will drop by in about 30 from now for the very latest in that situation. Also in a couple moments, Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca put out an excellent piece earlier today, a deep dive into Joe Thornton's return to Switzerland ahead of his Maple Leafs debut. So make sure to check that out. But Justin, a lot is happening right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, busy times, and let's be honest, it's a little bit stressful if you're a hockey fan. Things were agreed upon. There was a six-year CBA. We were cruising forward. We were going to have a short offseason here, and the puck was going to drop. And yeah, things are a little tense here. Things might be a little tense for the rest of the month, to be honest.
Yeah, and it seems to be that way, because I think the big question for me, and I'm sure you'd probably include that too, is just, you know, the January 1st puck drop, what is the exact cutoff? And, you know, we'll never hear it, but what do you think is the latest a deal can be done, ratified, and put together for a January 1st puck drop to still be realistic?
Well, you know, they initially were saying in earlier this week, like 7 to 10 days, they needed to get things done, but that's... You know, I think there are rush orders that can work. Elliot mentioned in his piece that it could be as long as the end of the month. You know, if you went to the end of November, which is 11 days from now, something like that, 11, 12 days, it's conceivable that you could rush the season along and it could still happen by January 1st. So I would say we are absolutely on the clock, but it's probably not 7 to 10 days. It might be just a bit outside that range.
Yeah, and certainly I think it's fair to say urgency is picking up when it comes to negotiations. But you wonder if these stumbling blocks are just too much to overcome. And it's sort of amazing to me, and maybe amazing is not the right word, but in the summer, everybody was saying, well, this is great. You know, the PA and the NHL got together, everybody's happy. And then next thing you know, you move forward a couple months and the contention in the media again. Do you think this is sort of a play? I understand why the PA is upset about this situation, but to get this out maybe into the media a bit here?
Possibly. What's interesting and makes me feel a little bit better about this is, you know, neither side seems to be using a strike or a lockout as a bargaining tool. It seems in the past that one side has been willing to go to the mat over this. Both sides want to play hockey. And so whether this is owners just trying to hang on to more dollars or whether it is about the league genuinely trying to stay afloat in the short term, it doesn't feel like it's about... you know, go to the mat for more when they don't have to. So we're going to get hockey, I think, at some point here. It's just a matter of coming to an agreement. So the NHL, you know, the NHL's in dire straits and they're trying to save it here. So that's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think the big key is here, just release more jerseys tomorrow to make some more money. Maybe some
I'll talk about
them. Some
New
future
Jersey
concept
day,
jerseys. I love that. That's Justin Bourne. I'm Nick Alberga here on Hockey Central. In mere moments, we're going to be joined here and talk more about the Joe Thornton situation and how he ended up back in Switzerland with Luke Fox. Again, Elliot Friedman coming up in about 25 from now. But that is the very latest. And you wonder if now this goes behind the scenes, Justin, and you don't hear as much in the next couple days, because certainly the urgency is on and time is of the essence. Certainly, I think when both sides seem to be circling around January 1st, you want to get something going. And no doubt, I think we're at a point where the two sides are talking every day, right?
For sure. And what's hard right now is if you're the players and you're going to give up more money, well, why? What is that?
What's in it
with?
For me?
You
know, yeah.
Right. Exactly. You've made an agreement. Nothing has changed on a material level from, you know, outside of maybe the NHL doing some poor math early, you know, 4 months ago. So if nothing's changed, why am I giving this up? Well, the NHL might have to throw them a bone on something else to make this work. I don't even know what could possibly be on the table, but it's rare in a negotiation when there's already a deal for one side to try to take back money without something going the other way too.
How about expanded playoffs?
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, listen, I thought it was great. The play-in idea, I would love a 7-10-8-9 best of three to decide who plays the one and two seeds every year. I'd be up for that.
I just want to see hockey. And, you know, on that conversation, I think it's tremendous that if the season starts January 1st, Kirby Dach, who played like 75 games in the show last year, is actually going to miss time because at the World Juniors. And just the dominance that we're already seeing from Kirby Dach, is going to be pretty sensational. And it's just fascinating, that whole perspective too about the World Junior and how that could leapfrog into the NHL season.
Yeah, what a play Doc made. I don't know if you saw the highlight. Dropped into his own feet, back kick from a two-on-one. He's looking pretty decent at that level. So the things like that will be fun to monitor.
They are for sure. And again, we're looking to link up here with Luke Fox in mere moments. Certainly the bone of contention yesterday. And we do have Luke Fox on the line. Is that what we're hearing here? Okay, so Luke Fox, we now bring him in. Long-awaited return of Luke Fox here on Hockey Central. Luke, thanks so much for doing this. We'll get to the Joe Thornton piece you put out. I thought was fantastic, and I read that earlier today before coming on air. What's your thought, your perspective on the latest, what's happening here as we try to return to play for another NHL season?
Yeah, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. I read Elliot's report this morning, and I understand why the players would not be happy when they already agree to a certain amount of escrow and a rollback, and then the owners come to them with hat in hand, these billionaires, asking, could you please take a little bit more back and delay payment? So I understand. And what was interesting to me is guys like Tory Krug and Alex Pietrangelo, how they structured their contracts in a way that was beneficial to them based on what was already agreed upon. And now they're trying to move the goalposts a little bit. So I understand why there's a little bit of hesitancy or frustration on the players' part, but I am of the belief that, you know, something will get done. And I do think there's a positive that, yes, a little bit's leaking out, but it's not as public or as ugly as baseball got before their return to play. So I'm trying to remain optimistic, and I think both sides will see that, you know, if they dig their heels in and not play based over money, it's going to be to the detriment of the league and the sport. So I do believe they'll find a way to get things done.
What are your thoughts, Luke, on the possibility of them not doing hubs? You know, going to there was rumors today, or in Elliot's post, he had mentioned the possibility of a 60-game season where everyone's just in their own building. I mean, do you think that's smart? Do you think that's how it's going to end up? I'm curious about the hub conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. You know, I understand from the owner's perspective why they don't want hubs. You know, they want local TV, they want local start times. Their fan bases are used to watching their teams at certain times. You know, they have board ads sold. There's a lot that goes into it. So I understand why they want to do it that way. I think we're in for a very truncated schedule, one with tons of back-to-backs, heavy workload on the players. You know, I do think one of the positives I think that could come from this, if there is traveling, is that maybe they take a look in the future about their traveling schedule. I remember Jonathan Toews spoke about this one time, about how the NHL schedule isn't very green. It's not very environmentally friendly. And maybe it could lean a little bit more to the baseball way where you go into a town and you play a team a few times. And do that as opposed to zipping around the country just for one game. It gets very expensive and it's bad for the environment. So I think maybe there could be some positives that come out of this in how the NHL looks at their travel.
With Luke Fox from Sportsnet.ca covering the National Hockey League and, of course, the Maple Leafs. And certainly that is sort of the conversation, is to start this season as quickly as possible, because it sounds like buffer zones, they want to utilize those in the schedule, and that's why there could be anywhere from 48 to 60 games. But, you know, the curious thing for me, guys, and you can get both your thoughts on this, just how they handle COVID in general, right? I think you look at Major League Baseball, you look at the NFL. Sad as this it is to say, I mean, there are going to be positive COVID cases, and Luke, I just wonder how that's handled, like a COVID list.
Yeah, I mean, the other sports are doing it, right? They're pushing through. You know, and you just have to adapt. If you're going to go through with playing, there's going to be bumps in the road. I don't think you can do it without the bubble model, and the bubble model isn't going to fly with the players. So, you know, you're going to have to live with it, and you're going to have to adjust the schedule. You're going to have canceled games. You're probably going to have to build in, I would think, maybe a couple weeks or something to the end of the regular season schedule before the playoffs start. So you have time to make up games that teams may have to miss due to results. It's going to be an ongoing, talent, I think, for the league, for the players. But, you know, to try and see the upside, I think they did a phenomenal job in pulling off the return to play last time. And, you know, they really went, they really favored the health and safety side of things. Like, it was over the top. So I think they'll invest the right resources to provide enough testing and to stay on top of it. And I think players, you know, for the most part, they're in this to you know, have some success to get the season in. And I think they'll comply. I don't think you'll have a bunch of players going out to bars and restaurants in Florida with their mask off or anything. I think they'll take this seriously.
Luke, I'm going to roll the dice here and go for it and try to say the name of the general manager of Davos here, and Rado Raffanen? Raffiner? you had a great piece, an interview with him on how Joe Thornton is doing over in Switzerland right now. Maybe give all those Leafs fans up there just an update on how things are going in Joe Thornton, how's he looking, and you know what they can expect.
Well, if you talk to Rito, which I did for about 25 minutes, he's just over the moon about this guy. And it's a really crazy story because he was actually a player in the Swiss League when Thornton came over for the first lockout and joined Davos, and he beat Rato's team. He was playing for Zurich at the time, and Thornton's Davos team beat them in the final. And he just thinks he was so lucky to have that honor, to lose to Thornton in the final. Like, he's a bit of a legend over in Davos, just the way he is here in North America. He's so revered. So when he came over in the summer, as he always does, Rito basically handed him the keys to the facility and said, come skate, come work out, do what you want on your own schedule. And then Joe said, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to go back. I think I'm going to sign in the NHL. And Rato told him, well, I want you to sign there before you play here because we don't have enough money to cover the insurance. So he signed with the Leafs, signed with Davos for no money. Joe said, I know you can't afford it. Just pay me next year or in 2 years or in 3 years. I just want to get ready. So Rato says, perfect. They order a bunch of Joe Thornton Corona masks with his face on it, a bunch of jerseys. They arrive just in time for the home opener. They're allowed 66% capacity. They sell out all the Joe Thornton masks and jerseys sell out. They whoop their opponent 9-2. The city's going nuts. They got a little bit of Joe Thornton mania. And then, unfortunately, the Corona numbers spiked after that, and now they can't have any fans. But Joe's fit in seamlessly. He's already, you know, when the team was struggling, Rato said that he already stood up in the locker room and you know, got the guys going and has already been this leader for this team overseas. And he's averaging more than a point a game. And Rato says he's the smartest guy on the ice. You know, even though the legs aren't quite what they used to be, he still sees the game at an elite level and is a weapon on their power play.
That's 2020 merch, if I've ever heard it. It's Nick Alberga, yeah. Justin Bourne here, joined by Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca, talking about his awesome piece up right now on Sportsnet.ca regarding Joe Thornton, his return to Switzerland ahead of his debut here as a Maple Leaf. I know Justin loves this conversation, but I'll ask the question, load management. How much is Joe Thornton playing out in Davos? And, you know, what is your expectation as we get closer potentially to a puck drop and Joe Thornton where he can fit into this lineup?
Yeah, I asked Rachel about that, if they're managing his workload, and he said not at all. He said that they have had some games postponed, so it wasn't a very heavy schedule. But last week they played 3 games, including a back-to-back, and Joe played in every single game, regular shifts. He's been first-line center, second-line center over there for Davos, first power play unit, you know, a buck 20 every power play, and he hasn't missed a beat. So they're not managing his workload. They've left it up to him. I was really curious to see if Kyle Dubas and Rato had any conversations about, hey, this is how we want you to use him because we see him filling this role with Toronto, and they haven't. Rato says that he just deals with Joe directly, and Joe says, don't worry about me. Worry about the team. I'll do whatever. And it's a really infectious attitude that he has on that group over there. When he comes over here, I would expect that maybe they do manage him a little bit tighter just because, A, they have so many forwards, and, B, you're bringing Joe Thornton in for the playoffs, really. You're not bringing him in for the regular season. It's not about that at this point. This guy wants to win a cup, and you want him fresh going into the playoff round.
What's a reasonable expectation for him next season in terms of, like, offensive output and minutes per game?
Well, I look back over his career, and he's never played anything less than 15. So I know some people think maybe he'll be the fourth-line center. I'd be surprised. I see that he'll probably start off as third-line center, and I don't know that for sure, but I would just think that that's where you want him. And the Alexander Kerfoot experiment didn't quite work. Joe's a really strong guy on face-offs. I would expect that he at least gets a shot at that 3C spot, and maybe Kerfoot goes over to the wing. But I think it will be a work in progress. And the one thing I think fans should realize is wherever he starts, wherever anyone starts opening night, it's not in stone. You know, Sheldon Keefe is really open to mixing up his lines game to game, shift to shift. So I expect a fair amount of experimentation, especially in the first couple weeks of the season, to see what works best for this Leafs group, because there have been a lot of changes on the fringes of the forward group. So I would expect, things to be moved around until he finds the right mix. But I would be surprised if he's playing fourth line minutes. I would expect more third line for Joe.
And Luke, do you think the Leafs may have inadvertently set themselves up well for a potential taxi squad in terms of having depth in their bottom six? I mean, the expectation when the NHL does return is that rosters could be bigger than norm.
Yeah, the Kyle Dubas pretty much got every bargain bin forward available, like, and some fantastic deals, like Jimmy Vesey for under $1 million. Wayne Simmons took less to come to this town. Of course, Joe, and then, guys like Joey Anderson are coming here. They're coming with NHL dreams. They're not coming here because they envision themselves as Marley. So it's going to be a really competitive camp. And I think also, from my perspective, I think Dubas kind of learned something from particularly Jake Muzzin's injury in the Columbus series. I think he wanted more depth up and down his lineup because injuries are inevitable. And I think with the compacted schedule that we're in for, I think they're probably going to go up a little bit. So I think he's guarded himself well at depth all the way from the goaltending position, bringing in a guy like Aaron Dell, which was, I think, a really smart move through the blue line. You got competition between guys like Dermott and Bogosian for minutes there, and Sandin, and then up through the forward ranks, which should be really enticing, because I look at their forward group and you could almost have five lines of guys that are NHLers.
So how do you like the Leafs offseason in general there? Because there's obviously made quite a few changes, a lot of turnover. I don't know that they're tougher, which was quite a bit of the complaint. I guess maybe they're a little bit. Where do you stand on their offseason and what that'll mean for them next, well, whatever this weird season is?
Yeah, I like it. I think Bogosian was a nice pickup. That is kind of, the sandpaper element, and actually a pure right shot, right defenseman, penalty killer. I think they needed a guy like that. I think they got him at good value. I know they're hoping Brody could be the kind of the security blanket to let Morgan Rielly run wild and be the fourth man in and kind of give him the partner that he never really had last season. Really the best partner for Rielly, believe it or not, has been Ron Hainsey, and they haven't landed on a guy to fill that role. So I'm optimistic that Brody could be that guy. And, the only thing I think they could have done was make a major trade and take a massive swing and try to convince Alex Pietrangelo to come here. I think that's the only thing people could argue would make them more ready to win now. But that's a huge gamble because you don't know what Pietrangelo's worth is going to be towards that end of that big ticket that he signed in Vegas. So they made a bunch of small moves on the fringes. They did bolster their defense. I give him a solid A-minus for his work in the offseason. And especially, I think trading Kasperi Kapanen for a first rounder, we see now how difficult it is for GMs to dump salary and get like nothing back. I think getting ahead of that game was a real critical move for Dubas.
Yeah, in hindsight, that was a phenomenal move, and that's probably why they made the deal when they did in the middle of the playoffs, because they knew just that it wouldn't get better than that, certainly. The last one from us, more of a hypothetical. So Dan O'Chara's name is still out there. I know the Leafs are sort of cap-strapped, but if it made sense, I mean, you're at least making that call if you're Kyle Dubas, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's your job. You explore everything. I just don't know where the cap space would come from, and I'm really curious if Chara is kind of Boston or bust at this point. I don't know if he's willing to uproot his family and play for another team. Maybe he is, I would be surprised if Chara ends up in a Maple Leaf uniform. Put it that way, but yeah, you make every call you need to make.
Just want to do that Photoshop for him and put that jersey out there. Luke, appreciate your time here. Everybody check out on sportsnet.ca Luke's latest regarding Joe Thornton and his latest visit to Davos. Thanks so much for this.
All right. Have a good show, guys.
You as well. Take care. That's Luke Fox of sportsnet.ca. And that would be, you know, fascinating to mull over, but I think Luke's right. The cap doesn't make sense. But all in all, Justin, I think you look at this offseason, this Maple Leafs team, for the most part, accomplished what they're after. I totally agree with you. I think, you know, the conversation about grit gets too heavy in this market, in my opinion. I think you pretty much exchange Kyle Clifford for Wayne Simmons. Zach Bogosian will help, but Zach Bogosian, it's not the same Zach Bogosian from the Peterborough Petes. I mean, this guy's older in his career, on the other side of 30. I think he adds some depth to the back end. But to me, and I've always said this, it has to be internal buy-in throughout the roster if you want to play that heavier brand of style, which I think you're able to play. I think case in point, you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think bringing in, you know, veteran type guys, you know, energy guys, if you will, like Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman, it's contagious. You've been inside a locker room. Is it not contagious when you get players like that?
Yeah, yeah, no, there is. The guys that play with energy and, they're up for every game. I also think just the energy that comes with playing Canadian teams every night might be good for this Toronto Maple Leafs team. It's going to be an exciting time. I think it's an extra level of competition. I think that when you're the most talented team, having engaged players is a good thing. I like the Leafs' position this year, certainly more than I would if they were playing in the Atlantic Division.
You're right. And again, the conversation will stem over the coming days as we hope something comes to fruition, a recommendation. And it sounds inevitable at this point that we're going to get an all-Canadian division. And with that, a high likelihood that we'll see a Canadian team in the conference final, which I think is a starting point when you try to win the cup for the first time since 1993 in this country. But I think it's going to be outstanding in terms of play here in this country, because I think you can make an argument for six of the seven teams, and Ottawa is going to be a tougher out this season as well, that a lot of these teams have improved in this offseason, Justin.
What's wild to me is, like, if they have a Canadian division, and then, you know, everything we're reading here in Ontario is that there's vaccines coming between January and March. There's supposed to be 8 million doses of vaccine in the province. I don't know where that would go or how that would play out, but I'm just wondering if, like, come March or April, if they're talking about starting playoffs in May, would they realign? Were there a vaccine, or would they continue to stay in a Canadian division? Because I could see a scenario where, you know, come March, you could have fans at these games, and how exciting would that be for Canadians if they had a Canadian division but still were able to have fans at the games? There's potential for a really exciting season here ahead, so we shall see.
Yeah, there is. Certainly, I think you look at, especially the Montreal Canadiens, you know, the additions they've made, you know, the Vancouver Canucks move on from Jacob Markstrom, but you get Nate Schmidt in the fold there, and clearly the Calgary Flames, we think, have gotten better. Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom, you know, Winnipeg picking up Paul Stastny once again. It seems like a lot of the major additions, with exception to a couple, Torrey Krug and Alex Pietrangelo and Taylor Hall to Buffalo, that they've come from Canada. That's why I think it's going to be so fascinating to break down the division. But we talked about it a couple of weeks back. I think Maple Leafs, the Toronto, would be a front runner to win that division, no?
Yeah, I would think so. The betting odds right now have the two Alberta teams as the second and third favorites, with Montreal and Vancouver slotting in after that, and then, you know, Ottawa. Ottawa's better, sure, but they're still Ottawa right now.
Ottawa's got three retro jerseys now. I'm keeping score at home now with the reverse retro and the two new retro jerseys that they've brought back. All we need is Radek Bonk to come back, and I'll be happy for life. With that in mind, that's Justin Bourne. I'm Nick Alberga. We'll hit the break other side. We're going to welcome in Elliot Friedman. Needs no title because he always brings it. And we'll have the very latest on the conversation between the NHL and the PA as we try to hammer something out and get the game going back on the ice potentially for January 1st. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, welcome back to Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne with you on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy at JT Bourne. Again, in mere moments, in a couple moments from now, we'll link up with Sportsnet's NHL insider Elliot Friedman. The very latest on what's transpiring as negotiations continue when it comes to a resolution and returning to play for another NHL season between the NHL and the PA. The PA had a call that spanned almost 3 hours yesterday and left that call, Justin, a bit feeling betrayed and angry. So certainly I think it was smart to take some time off and to reset here for the PA.
Yeah, no, I mean, anytime the terms of an agreement like this are changed, you're not going to be met with like, hey, right on. You know, you could have expected some backlash from the players. That doesn't mean that with a little bit of time and cooler heads that they can't reach some sort of agreement, but I do think that frustration is natural and expected, and I don't imagine the owners expected any other sort of reaction. So I don't think anything out of the ordinary when we hear news like that.
And it is, of course, a part of the negotiation process. You would have to think the fact that this got out into the open, I think at this point, Justin, the NHL knows where the PA sits, right?
Yeah, it's all pretty clear. I imagine getting all the communication from all the players is part of the difficulty here. Like, there's 16 players representing the players in all these conversations, but I imagine there's a lot of talks going on behind the scenes to get a sense for how everyone feels and that the group is adequately represented, and I'm sure there's some voting process in place as well. So a lot of work to be done. It's not as simple as just getting on the phone and saying, what do you think? What do you think? This is a lot of communication involved.
You're exactly right. And I think, you know, the backstory here and the thing we have to keep at the back of our minds is that we've sort of circled this January 1st type date around there, at least for a potential restart. But I think, there's a variety of factors you have to keep in mind. A training camp has to span at least, 2 weeks by the sound of it. They sort of promised those seven teams who didn't play in the bubble some additional time. So you factor that in. And you sort of start to run out of racetrack. That's why I think, clearly the next week and a half are paramount, that if you're going to, target that date and start around that date, then you have to get cooking here. So I think the level of urgency, Justin, is going by the day up and up, because I think both sides understand. I think, to a point you made earlier on, I think it's important to stress the positive news that both sides seem eager to start this season. It's not more of a fact of, hey, one side is willing to say, you know what, we're going to wait for what we want. Both sides want to get something done here.
Yeah, and they've done some good things, it sounds like, with the return to play plan this time around, which would be building in a week after the season that would be ready to go for, were there COVID-related postponements that were necessary. With that, I imagine this is the sort of thing that you have that wiggle room. Is this where that week disappears? You hope not. You would like to leave yourself that plan, but there is time here to come to an agreement. As much as it's going to be tough, I think it will be possible.
And of course, there are bigger stumbling blocks. And again, we wait word to welcome in Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL insider, to the program to get the very latest on this situation. There's a lot that has to be hammered out in terms of scheduling, buffer zones, divisions. Those seem to be smaller blocks right now than, the deferral and escrow talk. And that's the fascination here of something that was agreed upon a couple months ago. And now it seems like the NHL is going back on its worth. But it gets into a whole conversation. And certainly, I think some people look at it from the outside and say, hey, wasn't good faith, achieved in the summer, both sides, and now there's contention. But I do feel, to come full circle, Justin, I just think this is part of the negotiation process. And I think one side preferred if something was surfaced publicly. And now we've got to that point. That's why I think we're going to go quiet the next couple of days.
Yeah, and that would make a lot of sense. The hardest part for me, what I've been bandying about in my own head here, is just, you know, the owners and Gary Bettman are such professionals and really think things through. A lot of these guys are businessmen. It's impossible for me to believe that they couldn't have foreseen a shortened schedule for a 2021 season. So with that possibility not being ironed out when they did the previous CBA, you know, did they intend to do this? And I think that would be a hard part for me as a player. I would understand the global realities. It's a pandemic. A lot of people are taking a hit. But, you know, it doesn't feel, if you believe that the owners intended to do this, that changes things, because then it feels a little unscrupulous and a little, you know, bad faith. So I think there's some hurdles, both the emotional ones and the logical ones, for the players to get over here.
Well, to quote our next guest, tomorrow, or yesterday, excuse me, was not a good day. Let's hope today is better, as we welcome in Sportsnet's NHL insider, Elliot Friedman. Elliot, thanks so much for taking some time. I know you've been busy the last couple of days. What's the very latest you can tell us on this fluid situation?
Well, you know, I just think, like I said, Nick, like yesterday was a tough day for the players. Like you normally in this business, you send out texts or make calls, and you're lucky if like a certain percentage of them gets returned. Yesterday, a lot of them were getting returned, and overnight, because you know they were frustrated, they were upset, and some of the reasons that Justin was just mentioning there. You know, I think cooler heads will prevail. I think the train got off the tracks yesterday. They'll try to put it back on the tracks as soon as today. You know they need each other. This is not a time where you can really afford to have the league and the players not on the same page. There are much bigger issues. And I think they will get it. Like I said, I think they will get it sorted out. I just think that yesterday was a very tough day, a very raw emotional day for the players. And they need some time. Now, one thing, Nick, I can tell you is I know just some agents are running the math for their players. They're saying, look, if you and certainly I'm sure that what was suggested by the league could be negotiated too. I'm sure those numbers aren't set in stone. But I think what a number of agents are doing is running the math for their clients and saying, OK, like this is what they need. And I was talking to one guy this morning and he was saying, look, if you figure it out, if you take like a $3 million player and assume 40% tax, it is a difference of probably I think he told me, I have the figures somewhere else, was around $200,000. And that's if you defer it. And he's a big believer in you defer over escrow. You take the biggest deferment option you can, and you do the escrow change. So he was suggesting his players, we're talking about a couple $100,000, which you can manage as long as you don't need the money right away. But, you know, I still think it's not easy for these guys to hear 4 or 5 months after they made a deal.
Elliot, I'm going to ask you a question that is probably has a boring answer. I'm not the smartest person in the world, and I don't necessarily understand the difference between the deferral and the escrow payments. In which situation do the players and get their money and when?
Okay, so I hope Nick is smart, because Justin, if you're saying you're not smart, that puts two dumb guys in this conversation.
I'm pretty dumb too, Elliot.
It's very possible.
You know, the difference is this. Deferment means that you put back, there's a payment plan that was suggested in this deal. So the players already agreed to have 10% of their salaries this year deferred. And there's a payment plan, and I don't have it right in front of me, but it's a couple of years down the road. And eventually you do get that money back. I don't think there's interest on it, but you get that money back at the escrow numbers that are a couple of years ahead, which are lower. Like this year in the new deal is the highest escrow, 20%. So what you do is you don't get that money right away, but you do get it, and you get it at a lower escrow number. That's the benefit of it. Escrow means you have that money taken off your account immediately, and you only get it back if, depending on where the revenues end up. And they're supposed to be split 50-50. So that number makes sure that you hit 50-50. And if there's a shortfall, the league gets more of it. If there's too much for the league, the players get some money back. The way this is going, without fans, or at least a lot of fans for most of this season, it's going to tilt heavily towards the players. because they will be collecting their salaries and there won't be as much revenue. And that's what the league's position is here. And, you know, I spoke to some people around like last night and this morning, and their point is quite simple. Look, the CBA says it's 50-50, and we want to make sure, we need a mechanism to make sure it's 50-50. And I think there's a lot of people who look at it that way. It's just, it's tough for the players to hear after they just did a deal. That's what the issue. That's why they're so emotional, upset about it, because they thought this was behind them.
I haven't been this confused. Thank you.
I was going to say, I haven't been this confused since grade 9 academic math.
Well, I mean, it works. That's not good.
With Elliot Friedman, it's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne here in Hockey Central. If the players aren't keen on this extra deferral and consider it a non-starter, Elliot, could the league theoretically shut down over the issue?
Okay, I don't think the deferral is as much of a problem as the bigger escrow numbers are. Like, mm-hmm. escrow is just a dirty word to them. They don't like it. They hate the word. And I mean, I know why it's there, and I think everybody who understands economics and business knows why it's there. They just hate it. They see it as their job is to play, and this escrow thing gums up their paycheck. So that's why they get so upset about it. So I don't think that deferral is as much the problem as the escrow is. I think it's more likely that they will agree to a deferral than increased escrow, although one might be part of the other. I think they don't hate one as much as the other, so what I want to say. But I don't believe, Nick, that we're not going to play. Uh-huh. Like, I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
And I've been around sports enough to know when a lockout or a strike is a strategy. In the last 28 years, we've seen one player strike and three lockouts. And you know that feeling going in. You know it going in, that it's going to happen. That is not the feeling right now. The players want to play. The league wants to play. Do I think there are some teams who aren't thrilled about this and aren't convinced the economics work? Yes, I completely believe that. But like Bettman on the call last week, guys told me he's hell-bent on playing, and he wants to start sooner as opposed to later. So we're going to play. We're just going to have to find a way to work this out. I just can't imagine in the middle of a pandemic that this is going to end up in that way. I refuse to believe it.
Frija, in your latest Quickie blog, which also submarined an article I was writing but did it better, I was wondering if you could elaborate on the plan that would be in place for next season. You mentioned that there seems to be some sort of structure outlined. Going ahead here.
Yes, from what I hear, they're talking 60 games. Now, I did get a text this morning from someone who said it could go up to 62, but it looks like it's 60. It's a Canadian division, three U.S. divisions. Basically, put your columns down the states and you get who's in what division. Divisional play only in your own buildings, baseball style, back-to-backs in one arena. Playoffs begin at the latest mid-May. I believe there is going to be a week or two built into the schedule after the regular season before the playoffs to make up any games that need to be made up. And if not, you just move up the playoffs. Stanley Cup awarded by mid-July at the latest. So I think the players in the league have both seen this, and I think they've both, I mean, there could be some tweaks here and there, but I'm told that's what they're looking at, and they both kind of agree that that's where they're going to go.
How about roster sizes? Are we going to see expanded rosters, maybe even some taxi squads?
You know, Nick, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I know the three teams that are most curious about that are Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. There was some talk about the AHL moving their teams, their affiliates, to Canada for the year. You know, Vancouver's in Utica, Calgary's in Stockton, and Edmonton's in Bakersfield because of the border issues. I'm told that's not going to happen anymore. The costs were prohibitive. So either you're going to be, now depending on what happens with the border, either you're going to have to know that you can get your players through the 14-day quarantine, or you're going to, I know it's been discussed. I just don't know how likely it is. I think it sounds like it's just those three teams that are really affected. If there's someone I'm missing, I can't think of off the top of my head. And I think they've asked about taxi squads, but I don't have the certain answer. I do know that they're not going to play in Canada. That was looked at, and it was scrapped because the costs were too prohibitive.
Is there a franchise that, you know, when we get through this and get back playing this upcoming season, but even beyond that into the one after that, is there a franchise whose operations have been significantly impacted by the pandemic to the fact that, you know, maybe they won't be spending the way they used to, and all of a sudden we're looking at a different outlook for that franchise going forward?
Like I don't know, Justin, if anyone hasn't been impacted. Like, yeah. I don't think it, like I will tell you, the blog I wrote this morning, the angriest reactions I got to it, and I got a couple, were from a couple of league and team guys who were very angry about that borrow money line. Like, it's never been less expensive to borrow money. Like, yeah. There were some people who were really angry about that line. Really angry about
that. I don't envy your job.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I know what I'm getting into when I do this, and like they it really bothered them. They had a very visceral reaction to it, and they were like, you know what? Like, that's over the line. And so I think it just shows you how raw everybody's emotions are. Like, Justin, like, I look at it this way. Like, even if you're a team like a Toronto or Edmonton, who are two of, or the Rangers, or Montreal. Like, we're talking about the league's real financial powerhouses. If you don't play with, you can't have fans in there, you're getting hammered. Like, one thing I think the NHL did was they asked teams, if we play without fans this year, how much money do you think you're going to lose? And I heard the numbers were enormous. Even like the bigger teams, probably even more so. So, Look, Montreal spent and some other teams spent, but look, like, there are other teams that didn't, that really didn't. And I just think the entire business has been impacted, just like everyone else. Like, nobody's gotten out of this unscathed.
And lastly, Elliot, the January 1st puck drop, realistically, what do you feel is the cutoff date to hammer something out before just that date becomes unattainable?
Well, there was a team last night that said to me they thought it was this weekend. I don't think that's necessarily true, Nick. Like I'll tell you, like, when Bettman says, and Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, they say they want to play January 1st, like they're not BSing us. Like, they, like, I think they've surprised people by how they are determined to do this, but they really want to try and do it. I mean, the more games, the better it is for your TV revenues and things like that. And also, it gives you more runway if COVID wreaks havoc with your season. So they really want to do it. So my guess is we've got to know sometime between U.S. Thanksgiving and the end of November. Now, I've written that and said that, and I've had teams that have reached out to me and said, that is way too tight a schedule. But one thing I do believe, Nick, is that they will try and crush some things or squish some things to get stuff done. Most players are skating right now, skating or playing. More and more of them have kind of made their way back to North America. Like, I don't think these players are, like, do we go maybe from three exhibition games to two? Like, the one thing people have been consistent in telling me is if they have to compress things to make it work, they will try. But I think we've got to know by latest end of November if we're going to play by January 1st.
You're the best, Elliot. Thanks so much for this. Appreciate it.
Just tell my family that. They don't believe it.
Take care.
All right, guys. Take care.
There you have it, Elliot Friedman, NHL insider. It's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne. We'll wrap up through this here on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, tying a bow on this Thursday edition of Hockey Central, it's Nick Alberga and Justin Bourne on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy at JT Bourne. I'm not sure if you saw this story, Justin, about Braden Holtby and his two pet tortoises. Did you see this?
I think I did. He's trying to get him across the border.
Yeah. So his wife Brandy putting out on Wednesday that Braden and his two pet tortoises are stuck at the U.S.-Canada border. I guess they didn't know that they needed export papers for that? Like, what, 2020 in a nutshell, is that not?
It is. I will say, like, even when my wife and I moved from Arizona to Toronto, like, there's a process of bringing a cat to the country. You can't just drive across the border with animals in your car. I appreciate the idea that they wouldn't think of that. You don't think your tortoise needs a passport, but it's pretty hilarious that that's what's got them hung up.
Interesting to say the least. And again, we inch closer and closer to just trying to figure something out when it comes to the NHL and the PA. But I think we echoed the sentiments during the break, Justin. I just miss hockey. I miss talking hockey and actual, you know, players on the ice. But I think once something is hammered home, I think the market will open up big time, clearly.
Yeah, and this is going to be really fun when it comes back because everything's going to be accelerated, right? You're going to have more games, you're going to have back-to-backs, you're going to have Canadian teams playing Canadian teams. Like, once we get going, which everyone thinks we are going to do, it's going to be a very exciting season. There's just this tense sort of purgatory we're in right now as we wait for the PA and the league to sort to find their way through.
Let's hope today is a good day. Justin, thanks so much for this.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks to Luke Fox, Elliot Friedman for guesting here on the show, Sam McKee, Lance Kennedy, and Dylan Brown for their bang-up job behind the scenes. And for Justin Bourne, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening, and hopefully we have hockey soon, folks. Been a pleasure bringing this to you, Hockey Central, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.